Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB. 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Now today we're going to be talking about a different kind of crime, one that we haven't really covered up to now. So it's kind of a new thing, but I think it's something we might start hearing more about. And it's really the crime based in kind of a social media way. And so who we've got is we've got a guest that's written a book for Wild Blue Press. And let's see, it's called You Have a Very Soft Voice, Susan. And it's a shocking true story of internet stalking. Susan Fenston, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me on.
So normally I always start out and say, well, ask the author how they started writing and what they what brought them into writing. Now, is this your first book?
Yeah, this is my first book. I'm not a writer, and I never intended to. I never really set out to be a writer or to write a book. So this is my first book. So this is a story that should be preserved.
Yeah, yeah, and the reason you got into it, I guess, is because this is your story. This is something that happened to you, and
yes.
And Brian Whitney kind of helped you go through the writing process, I guess, with the book. So, when did this all occur? Like, what timing are we talking about?
The events of the crime themselves began in 2003.
Okay.
So
about how old were you then?
I was about 40, okay. 41
okay.
years old.
And so what, maybe let the listeners know, what kind of a life situation were you in? Were you living with married and children? Were you single? In a suburb, in the downtown of a city? Kind of give a little, paint the picture of the background.
During the time that these events began, I was not married, but I was in a relationship. I don't have children. I work in publishing as a book publicist, and I'm from New York City originally, and at the time I was living in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, which is a pretty famous neighborhood now, but it wasn't back then. It was kind of like a forgotten, bottomed out neighborhood, industrial neighborhood, that is now very developed and very crowded and very fancy and expensive. So this really rolls back the time clock on what life was like in Williamsburg, even back then.
Wow. So now, so are you pretty active on social medias? Like, you know, have you been back then too? Like, were you in, did you have a cell phone and you're on all the different, I mean, Facebook and stuff like that?
Well, back then, Facebook had not been invented yet. We're talking early internet, 2003.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
As best as, you know, we all kind of forget the genesis of social media. It's very sophisticated now. But one thing really hasn't changed. Even though social media has become very advanced, people are still the same, right?
Yeah.
Crime shows, we go through this all the time. The human condition, the human nature has not changed. The internet has changed, but people really haven't changed. And I was very interested in the internet, and it was new. There were no social media, really. The only social media was AOL Messenger.
Yeah.
And I think Yahoo had a Messenger, and it was very primitive compared to now. You had a buddy list, you had friends and chatting, and it was simple, but it was fun, and it was all very new. And I was definitely interested in it. You know, I work in the publishing industry, and all forms of media are important and interesting to me for my job and just also as a person. So I was kind of doing that, and I never, you know, since then Facebook was invented, of course, but I really wasn't even interested in going on Facebook when it was first invented. You know, it was kind of like fine not being living in a fishbowl. So at the time, I was curious about my father's side of the family. My parents split up when we were very young, and my father, who was very, you know, sort of withdrawn and kind of reclusive, difficult to know, didn't really talk about family history very much. So, like anyone, you're curious about family, and today it's ancestry.com, and it's very, again, it's very sophisticated. You can build family trees, and you can connect with people. But back then, like everything else in 2003, it was really early. It was just, there was a site called genealogy.com, and it was very kind of primitive. There was no bells and whistles. It was just message threads that just connected, streaming down, kind of like the way they do now,
yeah.
But it was just very basic. So it was just message, reply, and it was popular even then. So I was interested in what was, you know, maybe what the history of my family was. I had read a lot of books about Europe and World War II and the Holocaust, and my father's side of the family was Jewish. So I was very curious about all of that and all of them. So I went to genealogy.com and looked at all the pages, and every family name had a page. And my name is Fenston, but originally in my lineage, the name was originally Feinstein. My grandfather had changed it. So there were no Fenston pages. This was kind of a made-up name.
Yeah.
So I went to the Feinstein page, figuring that's where the Feinsteins gather. So, and there was a lot of activity on the Feinstein page. So I looked through all of it, and I thought, gee, wow, there's a lot going on here. No one's ever going to notice my message. It felt like a drop in an ocean. So I posted a very simple post, looking for information on my grandfather, Morris Feinstein, who was from New York City around the turn of the century, just thinking someone somewhere might have some contact or memory or old faded memory of this person, and no one famous, of course, and thinking no one's ever going to respond. So
yeah, wow, that's crazy. And so how long did you have to wait before were you getting any responses at all, or was it just completely nothing?
Within a couple of days, I got one response from someone who didn't really seem like we had a real connection. You know, the timelines didn't match up, the family sort of placing didn't really match up. But I thanked him for answering me, and that was it. And then a few days later, I got another message. And this was from a woman named Karen Gardner, who said in her message reply to me that she was just casually looking up her own family tree and saw my message, and she said she nearly fell out of her chair because we apparently have the same grandfather, which was certainly plausible because my father's father had two marriages and two sets of children.
Yeah.
So the idea that there were distant cousins out there was certainly plausible and believable. So I, you know, a little cautious, but still thinking, gee, this is interesting. Not many people would really know this about my grandfather. And it all seemed to be clicking. So we got off the message board, we exchanged email addresses, and just, you know, slowly began to correspond with each other.
Okay. So you never actually met. Where was she supposed to be living?
Karen lived in Massachusetts, and she had a husband and two children, and she had a brother and a sister. Sharon was her sister, who also lived in Massachusetts, and her brother Leonard lived in New Jersey, which was much closer to me, in New York.
Right.
And she kind of described him as a wealthy math wizard, entrepreneur, Wall Street, very successful, kind of lived alone and was just a little mysterious. And I thought, all right, well,
yeah.
Some people are just a little mysterious.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm not from the most conventional
background.
So now, so you guys were communicating and kind of developing a little bit of a friendship online. Were you ever going to go meet her, or?
Well, it was very slow. You know, you don't want to just jump into something with someone. You know, I'm still feeling a little cautious, and you know, I'm a little bit of a reclusive person myself. There's something about a safe distance, just writing to each other, that I thought was okay. I used to really enjoy having pen pals in the past. You know, back when we used to write actual letters, put them in the mail, wait a week or two, get a letter. I love that.
Yeah.
I loved letters and writing to people. And sometimes that was enough. I didn't really want to take things any further. So excited about meeting people who were possibly relatives, definitely, because my father had passed away just a couple of years before that. My sister had committed suicide in 1987. I have a very small family, so there weren't a lot of family. So this was definitely intriguing and a little bit thrilling, I have to admit.
Now, this is interesting. So when you guys were writing letters or emails back and forth, were you learning anything new about your family or your grandfather that was supposed to be in common, or was it just stuff about her family?
It was really more about her family, and that's what I was, you know, that's where the jumping off point was. Her family, my family, what I did, what my life was like, her kids, her husband, her life, and she talked about her brother and sister a little bit. But it was very casual. It was, what are you doing for the holidays? What are you cooking for Thanksgiving? You know, stuff like that. It was very apple pie, very normal. And I wasn't really interested in, like, jumping on a train or a bus going up to Massachusetts, really, because she had sent me a couple of pictures of them and of her family. It was a posed family portrait by a professional photographer. They looked very conservative, you know, buttoned up, long skirts. I thought maybe they might have been maybe Orthodox Jews. I'm not sure, but they were definitely like upper middle class, very well dressed, standing there with their children and their beautiful suits, and everyone was. It just looked kind of picture perfect, and that kind of I didn't want to say intimidated me a little bit, but I thought, you know, I have a kind of an unconventional life. Maybe they won't like me. You know, maybe they'll think I'm. You know, maybe a little weird. I'm an artist. I live in New York. I don't have any kids. I work in publishing. I live in a kind of an industrial neighborhood. I wasn't really sure if these two worlds could completely meet. So I was going ahead at a nice distance with her.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things. If you have completely different, you know, lifestyles, it might not be it might wreck the relationship if you meet.
You may not get along. You may be just completely opposite. So that's the chance you take in all of these connections that you make with people. And it really depends on how far you want to take things.
Of course. Now, you weren't getting any weird signals. You weren't like going, oh, this is like freaky. Or there was nothing really unusual going on with the emails.
Not yet. No.
No. No.
That's changed.
So now, were you getting? Did you get any other contacts from that message board?
No, none.
That was
not
it.
Not at all.
Okay.
Yeah, nobody. It just kind of faded into the background, and that was it. But I was just kind of focusing on, wow, this is interesting. These are possible cousins.
Yeah, no, it's really cool and things like that. So how long before it started getting kind of a little bit weird, or let's just say unusual for you?
Well, she talked about her brother a little bit, and she was kind of keeping things quiet with her brother and sister, but then she opened up and told them about me. And she said that Leonard was excited to hear about me and expressed some interest in possibly meeting me at some point. And her sister wasn't really happy about this at all. She was very suspicious. It sort of moved ahead a little bit, and she was very guarded about the family and very private, and came to a point where she just out and out accused me of being a con artist, and that I was after the family money and after Leonard's money. And, you know, apparently he had some, you know, emotional issues, and she just went on a tear about me in an email to her sister about me, that I was just a thief and a liar, and I mean, none of that was true, and of course it wasn't true. I mean, I was really hurt by that, because I was sort of a little excited, and then I thought, okay, wait a minute, this woman is reading this completely wrong. I mean, this is the furthest, I'm just a regular person, and it's just normal curiosity. So that caused a disturbance in the web, you know, between them. Leonard had written me and said, welcome to the family. I hope the new year is treating you well, and maybe we'll meet downtown sometime the next time in the city. And I thought, I'd like to do that. You know, that seems safe, meeting in a public place, mm-hmm. having coffee. Mm-hmm. We could either like each other, we could either feel like we are just so, you know, separate and not connected. And, you know, that's the chance you take. So then he stopped writing, and Karen had said, well, she felt that maybe Sharon had already gotten to him, and told him that I was bad news and I should be avoided, and I was absolutely looking to rip them off somehow. So Leonard stopped writing to me. But in the meantime, he had given me his AOL instant message handle, which was L. Nachman 1. His last name was Nachman. So I added him to my AOL buddy list. And you can see when people sign on, at least you could back then, you could see them signing on, you could see them signing off. Their little icons with door would open and they'd swoosh in, and either they'd say hello or they'd just swoosh right out. So that's the way the things were back then. But he had stopped writing to me, but then he would pop on and off my instant message sort of message thing. I don't know what it's called anymore. But
yeah.
While all this was happening, I had a friend in Brooklyn, and I knew him in Brooklyn years ago. He moved to Florida. We're not friends for a long time. He kind of went his own way, but by about 2001, he found me on the internet. You could Google anyone, and he found me at my old job at Oxford University Press, because when you work in an industry like that, it's easy to find you. You've got your email out there on authors' websites, the publisher's website, etc. So Bobby and I had reconnected, and I was telling him all about this, and I was very excited about all this, and we would talk about them, and he and I would be chatting on AOL at night or any time. We were doing this a lot, and we would watch Leonard kind of pop on and off. And then at one point, I started getting a lot of porn sent to me. To my email address.
Oh.
A lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it terrible. Kind of weird porn, or was it just kind of just common stuff?
No, it wasn't common vanilla type porn. It was the darkest fringe of the porn world.
Okay, so pretty extreme.
It was disturbing.
Yeah.
Really disturbing. Escort services, transsexual escort services. It was a real emphasis on transgender. And
now, were you
a lot of weird stuff like that.
Oh no, were you getting like so when you were getting this through email, did you know who you were getting it from?
No, I didn't. But as I was watching, I would watch Leonard pop on to AOL Instant Messenger. He would pop on, I would get a flurry of porn sites and signing me up for all kinds of porn sites, not only just sending me porn, but putting my email address into porn sites, and I would get the confirmations that I had signed up for all this stuff. It was a lot of weird stuff. And of course, I wasn't doing any of that. So the porn would flow in, and then he would pop off. So this went on for a little while, and it was starting to become obvious that it was him doing this. Don't know why he decided to do this. We'd never spoken. I'd never had one email from him, and that was it.
Wow. How were you feeling about this? Like at the time, were you just thinking? Were you putting the two of them together, or were you just thinking it was just from maybe being online or going to different places that the porn was coming in?
Well, I knew that it wasn't coming from anything I was doing. I don't go to porn sites. It's not something I am interested in. I wouldn't accidentally do sign up for anything. I was really disturbed. I was really saddened, disgusted, and angry. I just felt like, why am I being trashed this way by this person? Why is he obsessing on me in this way? I've never done anything to him. I was sort of looking forward to maybe gaining a friend, and now suddenly something just went really strange, and it was clearly him, because the pattern was like he would come on, the stuff would come into my inbox, and then he would disappear, and then that was it. So I started to put it together, and my friend Bobby, we both agreed that this looks very connected. There was no doubt.
Now, were you feeling that at the time? Were you thinking that maybe he was just angry at you and sending this to be and doing these things because he was mad? Or do you think he was trying to come on to you? Like what were you thinking was the reasoning?
Well, at first I thought he was just acting out in some aberrant way. You know, I don't know these people. I have no idea, right, what their motivations were. I'm just sort of guessing and angry about this and thinking, what is even the point of this? Just leave me alone. If you don't want to be friends with me, just leave me alone. It's really simple. I'm not doing anything. I'm not approaching them or bothering them or doing anything. I'm still writing to Karen. But I'm not in touch with Leonard. And at a certain point, Karen was writing to me as though everything were nice and normal. And at some point, I didn't really want to tell her what was happening because it was just very disturbing. And I felt there was a little bit of a sexual obsession there, too. It wasn't just harassment. There was a lure there. There was an attraction there. There was a fixation. So I finally wrote to her and I said, you know, I really don't know how to say this. I hate to tell you, but I have a feeling that Leonard is sending me porn, some really bad porn, bad stuff. And then things went a little quiet for a little while. And then not long after that, she wrote back to me and she said, I'm really sorry. I should have told you more about Leonard. I wasn't as forthcoming as I should have been. And then she went on in detail to me in like a 3-page long email, his history, his mental health history and his criminal history too. Something that I wished I had been warned about a lot earlier. Right, but that's not the first thing you say to someone. Hey, welcome to the family. Oh, by the way, you know, Leonard is a very volatile in a weird way. But I didn't get any warnings, and here I was with this suddenly going off in my lap like a bomb. And I did not like being in the middle of this. I didn't want to be targeted by anyone. And she apologized, but then she went into a very lengthy and detailed history about Leonard going back early into their family, where they had the three siblings, but there was another sibling named Sandra who was a baby. And Sandra died in a mysterious fire in their house. Mm-hmm. And this was devastating to hear about, because I'm just picturing it in my mind. It's going on like a film in my head now. I'm seeing flames, I'm seeing screaming, and I'm imagining all this stuff. And Karen goes on to detail that the death of the baby Sandra was so devastating to their mother that she just had a complete breakdown and a complete break with reality. She was even carrying around a doll, pretending it was her baby and not letting it go. And there was suspicion that Leonard was possibly responsible, maybe, for the fire. And Leonard had been involved in some other things, peeping in windows in their neighborhood, looking at girls, peeping in their windows. And at one point, a father of one of these girls that he was peeping on approached him and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And Leonard hit him with a shovel. And I don't know how badly this man was hurt, but Leonard ended up getting sent somewhere for evaluation, for therapy, for just to get him off the streets, because there was a serious problem there.
Wow. Now, did you have any family that you were speaking with that were still alive that you could communicate with about this new distant family?
No, my father and his brother had both died, so there was no one on that side of the family. And I talked to my mother about this, and when I first told her about it, she wasn't really all that pleased to hear about it. She felt that my father and their whole family was just kind of crazy. And my father had been in and out of Bellevue Hospital in New York, which is famous for their psychiatric unit. And he had emotional issues and kind of dropped out, and he was hospitalized a couple of times, and he was reclusive and hard to know. So, you know, it was very believable that, you know, in the coil of DNA throughout this family, that there was a disturbance of some kind and manifesting in a quite ugly form. So my mother was not really particularly pleased, and she couldn't understand why I was searching for family anyway, but I don't think she could totally understand it, because when you grow up in a broken home, there's always that wondering, like, what's the other half? It's natural, right? Who?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What made me? It's just natural curiosity if you don't know anything.
Right.
So I didn't have any other family to talk to about this.
Yeah. And this Leonard sort of fit in a way because of his issues.
Yeah, it was believable, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff about my personal history in the book that we can't cover everything, of course, but just to suffice it to say that this unusual, unconventional way of being was not unheard of completely.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so. things happen.
Yeah.
So how long was this going on?
This went on for a couple of weeks, give or take, and Leonard then just disappeared. Karen did her best to sort of explain the whole thing, and she went into other detail about his criminal history as well, not just his psychiatric history, but there was a criminal sort of history as well. And Leonard, in the mid-'80s, had been charged along with two other men in a kidnapping and rape of a young girl.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
She talked about this a little bit, and she gave me a couple of names of the offenders. And that was, that I just felt like an electric shock go through me. Like, oh my God, this is even worse, right? This is not just some, you know, mental illness. You know, not all mentally ill people are dangerous. Some people just have problems, right? I mean, it's nothing to be ashamed of. But when you combine that with a violent criminal history, that's very bad. And so I had this letter from her, and I shared it with my friend Bobby, and we were just poring over it, all the details. What does this mean? Who are these people? So we looked at the names of the offenders, and we Googled them. And they were clearly registered sex offenders in New Jersey, and their pictures were up, their rap sheets, all their information about their arrests and their incarcerations were there, and they were terrifying. Yeah, you know, you think you see a lot. Criminals, you know, we all know what, you know, serial killers are like and so on and so forth, and it's nice to close the book of your true crime book and put it on the shelf, but when you're staring at it in the face and it's real, it's very different, and it's too close for comfort.
Yeah. Were you worried about him just showing up around your house or something?
Yes, I was. I absolutely was. But what happened was I reported him to AOL for the email abuse, and Roadrunner, which was one of the other accounts. I don't think Roadrunner exists anymore. Everything's changed, but Roadrunner, AOL, and I complained, and then I got a long, strange, sort of crazy quilt email from Leonard. And he says, "Do you like to complain?" He says, "I can make you moan, too."
Oh, wow.
So I sent this to Karen. This time I just didn't even care how she felt about it anymore. It was like, "Karen, this is your brother. I don't need this in my life. This is horrifying." And then things went a little quiet for a little while, and then I heard from her husband. Her husband is named Hal. And Hal was probably the more sane of the whole crew. And he said, "You know, I'm really sorry you had to go through this. Karen had said she was excited about meeting you. I'm very sorry about Leonard. Karen should have told you more, but because of this, because he had sent me these emails and all of this porn, it had violated some kind of parole of some sort that he had. So he was sent back to Greystone Psychiatric in New Jersey because he wasn't supposed to be doing things like this. So he was sent back to Greystone where Hal said he will be dealt with and they know him." So at this point, Leonard is now back in a psychiatric hospital in New Jersey, and the whole family, I'm sure, is just reeling from all of this, and me too.
Yeah, but in a way, you probably felt a little safer now all of a sudden.
No.
No. If he got put into a hospital, then at least, you know, we know where he's at.
Right, but that's not a permanent situation.
No.
That's a bring you in like an auto body shop. You know, they patch you up, they paint you, they fix your tires, they give you some medical medication, and then you're out. This is not permanent. Right. You know, no one's ever really permanently sentenced to psychiatric unless, you know, there are legal reasons why you can't be held forever and so forth. I mean, I don't know. Again, back then and probably still now, I'm not really familiar with all the, you know, yeah. the laws and the wheres and the whos and the whats of how someone is put into a state like that and then let out. But apparently he was in.
Wow. So what did you decide to do at that point?
I decided to stop talking to them and just go about my business and let it go. And I said, Karen, I'm really sorry. It's not what I signed up for. It was nice knowing you. I wish you all the best, but I cannot deal with this, right? I'm a woman, basically alone, living alone by the East River in a very industrial neighborhood and in a big city, and I felt very vulnerable, especially now that I had been embedded in Leonard's mind so deeply for some very unsavory reasons.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty scary. Now you were talking about your friend, what was it, Bobby or something?
Yes.
Were you telling him about everything that was going on as well? Were you guys getting closer?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really leaned on him for support during all this. At first, it was kind of interesting and kind of funny and odd and wow, look at this. And then it just turned very dark and went started going downhill very quickly. So I leaned on him for support. Every minute, all the time, showing him what was happening, talking to him about it on the phone, emailing him, chatting on instant message. So it became like a really sordid, awful, creepy soap opera.
Did it make you think that you maybe wanted to move in with him, maybe, or some other
no.
roommate? No. Or no, but or,
no.
Or another roommate or some, move away?
At a certain point later on, I was about to move away. Bobby was living in Washington, D.C., and I'm from New York. He's originally from New York, too,
yeah.
But he was living in D.C. I'm from the city. My whole life is in the city. My industry is in New York. Leaving New York would mean giving up everything.
Yeah.
So that wasn't really an option yet because it really hadn't, you know, things had started to get a lot worse. As things progressed, I mean, remember this happened over about a year and a half. So the months are ticking by, and things are just getting worse and worse. Bobby is gay, and we were very good friends. So there was no romantic interest or anything like that, and I had no intentions of moving in with him. But I really relied on his friendship for support because I really couldn't tell a lot of people about this. It was just too weird.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's yeah, I know what you're saying.
Weird and personal, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. So what were you going to do about it then? Like, did it get to a point where you felt like were people starting to show up at your house or phoning you or anything really weird like that happening?
There were a couple of hang-ups. Actually, right before the email that I got that said, you like to complain, I could make you moan. I was on the phone with Bobby talking about all this, like midnight, we're on the phone, and I'm shaking in my apartment, and I get a call waiting beep, right? It's a beeping, and I'm like, who is calling me
yeah.
at midnight? No one calls me at midnight, right? And you get that little electronic beep, and it makes my heart jump. You know, my heart is just leaping into my throat while this is happening. I mean, I'm shaking. And I'm like, who is that? And then the email came in. So gradually, the phone calls started kind of coming in. I had sort of let them all go. And then a few weeks later, Karen wrote to me again, apologizing again. Leonard is in Greystone, getting the help that he needs. He's basically kind of bouncing off the walls in his room, and he's very sorry about all of this, and he is painting a painting that he wants to give to me. Great. And I'm thinking, oh boy. And I just knew it was a painting of me. I just had a feeling. It just, yeah. He's painting a painting of me. He wants to make amends, and he wants to give this to me. And that was creepy.
Yeah.
Beyond belief.
Oh, wow. So.
And he is going to get out soon.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's something you have to worry about. So did
Absolutely.
Any more letters start coming?
I'd finally kind of learned to navigate all the porn that was still coming in, because there's a residual thing. When you sign people up for all this spam, you still get stuff emailed to you that you don't want. So this, it was like a lingering, you know, traces of thanks for joining triple, double, quadruple X and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you know, so that was kind of still going on. I'm still rattled from the whole thing. Still now worried that Leonard might show up when he gets out. And Karen had warned me. He's been known to disappear and go on voyages without telling anyone. So if she said, if he shows up on your doorstep, just smile and be friendly.
Oh, there you go. That's just smile, be friendly. Have some coffee.
Said, smile and be friendly, and here's the number for Gracie Square Psychiatric Services. They know him. If he shows up, just call them. And I just, you have to picture where I live. I live on the river, and back then, Williamsburg was pretty desolate. There were no high-rises. There were no luxury towers, no nothing, no nightclubs. I mean, it was a dead end by the water. So if someone just showed up on my stoop, knocking on my window. Now, I live on the ground floor. I don't live there anymore, but I lived on the ground floor and windows facing the street. So anyone could just knock on my window. So it was especially vulnerable, and thinking, this guy is just going to show up on me, and what do I do? It was terrifying. It was really terrifying. I'm not going to just smile and be friendly. You know, it's like dealing with Godzilla, right, or King Kong. I mean, you know, what do you do? Anything can happen, and he's obsessed with me. So I was terrified that he was just going to show up. So his family was kind of on that, yeah, we're kind of monitoring it, and, you know, he's living outside the facility, and he has some friends that are kind of helping him out, making sure he takes his meds and keeping him on track. But at this point, I'm just kind of wondering, like, what are his friends really like? I mean, how do you monitor somebody? So I just felt like this was a cannon, like a loose cannon about to go off at any minute. So, that's kind of where that led. But there's so much more. I mean, we could talk about this for hours and hours, and we kind of have to paint it with very broad strokes to kind of cover the narrative of this. So that's where that kind of, sort of stopped.
So were you considering calling the police or reporting this or anything like that?
I was. At a certain point, while this was all happening, I get another email. Hal and I, Karen's husband, began to email frequently because Hal seemed to have more of a handle on things. He seemed the most grounded and more objective. The family didn't have any objectivity. Karen always seemed to be smoothing things over. Oh, it was just a little legal thing. Oh, it was just a little thing. And oh, he's really a nice guy once you get to know him. But Hal was more realistic. He was like, look, there's some other things you don't know about Leonard. There's a young woman who was murdered in New Jersey, a young woman about 22, stabbed to death and left out to be found. And before she died, Leonard had met her and was talking to the family about how he met this new girl, and he was really happy about her, and he was really over the moon, and they had dated a little bit, and then one day he just stopped talking about her. And then later, not long after that, it was in the news that she was found dead. Well, of course, Bobby and I Googled her name, found the story, and it was just horrifying. She was young, and she had a little girl, and she was just starting out her life, and she was a single mother, and she wound up murdered by some savage, and she was a blonde, blue-eyed, about my height, which made it even worse.
Wow.
You know, I felt like I could have just slipped right into her shoes, right? You know, killers tend to have a pattern, people they like to kill, right?
Yeah.
Ted Bundy liked a certain type, right? Everybody has their type. So I thought, oh, God, I'm his type. This is awful. So that's when I went to the police. And I thought,
yeah,
at least I'd make a report in case anything happens and they can sort of have some evidence or something.
So with that girl that was found, so that was a real story. You were able to verify that through the papers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was real and it was unsolved.
So now do you think even now to this day that Leonard, so to speak, the character of Leonard actually killed that girl?
Well, what I know now is no.
Yeah.
He didn't. But I didn't know that then.
Yeah.
It gets far more complex than you can, most people could even imagine this thing gets. You think it's bad. Now, it gets actually a lot worse as things go on. This is just the beginning. And the murder was just a terrible, terrible, like, just a, it was, I felt like knives going into me. It was just awful. I mean, if I felt vulnerable and worried before, now it was getting to be like critical, and that's when I went to the police. And the police, remember, this is 2004. Internet is very new. How do you report this? How do you get things moving? He's in another state. I'm here in New York. Local police really aren't always equipped to handle certain things like this. Yeah, you're getting some strange, threatening emails, but there was nothing they could do about it back then.
Right.
They were like, well, we could take a report, but there's really nothing to follow up on. He's not in our jurisdiction. He hasn't broken any, you know, he hasn't committed any crimes yet, so there's nothing they could do. But they had a report. That's all I could do, just make a report. It wasn't very comforting.
No.
Not at all.
No, you can't really, you know, it's nothing you can hold on to there. There's just, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted it to stop. I wanted it all to stop. And at that point, I closed down my email accounts, changed them. I changed my internet server account. I went from Verizon to Roadrunner. I mean, I tried to erase all tracks and erase them all from my life. Did not want anything more to do with any of this. And but at the same time, while I was, you know, sort of like trying to disappear, I was really concerned about what was going to happen next. You know,
yeah.
It almost seemed better to keep an eye on them than to not.
Yeah, it's kind of so when you changed everything, did it all stop or did it start happening again?
There was a little bit of a break there. There was a little time out, which was an unsettling kind of reprieve because I still hadn't recovered from the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
I felt like I stepped on the third rail, right? I walk into this family's life and then they start, you know, splitting at the seams and going crazy, and someone goes into a psychiatric facility, and needless to say, his other sister, Sharon, who had painted me as a criminal, was now utterly on the warpath. And she, Karen, emailed me to warn me that Sharon was going to come to the city to confront me. She was going to drive. She made an excuse that she was going to go see some Broadway show, but she was really driving to New York to sort of check me out. So even though I had stopped checking my email accounts, they were still alive. You know, if you stop checking Yahoo, it'll stay alive for a long time.
Right.
But it doesn't really close, right?
Yeah.
So their emails from her were still kind of coming in.
Wow. So now you're worried about Sharon coming. Now, did anybody ever show up?
No one showed up and knocked on my door, but I got an email from Sharon saying, I've seen where you live. Ooh. I've seen where you live. I've seen that dump where you live. You know, I lived in a tenement building, you know, New York City style. It's not suburbia by any stretch. And to an outsider, it may look like, you know, slummy, but, you know, slummy is my home. But she said that she came, she saw where I lived, and it was a dump, and I deserved to live in a place like that. And she also made a trip around the neighborhood, and she went to the local pet store where I know everyone and was asking questions about me. And that was just awful.
Yeah.
Just the thought of her outside of my door. I mean, she's on the warpath. I mean, I forgot to mention that all of this drama, Leonard going in, Sharon was about to remarry. Hal told me that she had a previous husband who died, and there's some sort of, you know, suspicion about what happened to her first husband. Right, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But she was about to remarry, and her fiancé-to-be saw all of this happening with Leonard and everything, and he canceled their wedding plans. So she was on the absolute warpath. I had caused all of this, right?
Yeah.
I was like a bomb going off, and I'm being blamed for all of this. And all I did was, hey, I'm just searching for family. And now it's like a war going on. And Sharon was really out for blood. And she continued to send me emails from time to time, threatening me, not threatening to kill me or anything, but saying, you know, you'd better watch it, and we know who your boyfriend is. And at this point, my boyfriend starts getting hang-up calls.
Oh.
And whispery calls and hang-ups. There's no way any of them had his phone number. There's no way they could have even gotten it. So that was just shocking and awful. He would be, you know, just sitting there, and his phone would ring, and it would be like, you know, whispers like, I'm going to get you, you know, and then hang up on him. And that went on for quite a while. So not only was I being subjected to threats and stalking, but it kind of started spilling out into his life as well.
Wow. Crazy story. Now, this has a very unusual ending, and it's quite a surprise. I guess we don't want to give away the ending, really. We want people to pick up the book.
Yes.
But how would you best wrap it up? Like, without giving away too much here,
we finally, it gets worse. I mean, it goes deep and it gets worse and worse. And I'm now getting threats at my office and emails at my office. And then we go to the FBI and we get a meeting with the FBI. So the FBI gets involved. And then things just kind of go dark, right? FBI comes in. I have a meeting with them. I explained everything. And then it was like a light switch being flipped. Everything just went silent. Nothing happening. So there was a period of silence for a couple of months, and then it started up again. And to sort of wrap it up, the FBI finally are able, because of something that happened to me at work, get a subpoena for one of the email addresses, and they tell me who it is. And no one would believe it, right? If it weren't true, you just wouldn't believe it.
Yeah. But
I don't want to give the whole thing away, but
no,
I think, you know,
but
there's
so
much to this story.
It all turned out in the end where you're safe now, everything's good. Well,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you know.
I never feel really safe, honestly. I don't. But there was a conclusion, and there was justice. But I think you've really got to read the book to really get your mind wrapped around what was behind all of this, because it's completely unexpected. And there are many interactions with these sex offenders and other characters as well, and it goes deep.
Yeah.
And it just becomes like an opera, right? Like a Greek opera, just elaborate and the scope and breadth of it. But there's a real twist at the end that I never saw coming, and it was really sort of more shocking than the entire set of events themselves.
Yeah, it makes it more of a shock than anything. Well, incredible story, incredible book. We'll have this posted on our website. You have a very soft voice, Susan, and that's the shocking true story of internet stalking. Now, I would ask right now if you'd have any contact information for listeners, but you probably don't give that out anymore, hey?
I joined Facebook,
yeah.
And I very reluctantly joined Facebook, and I'm on Facebook. I don't have a website, and I don't have an author page. I think because I'm just so still worried about what's out there.
Yeah.
But if you want to, buy the book, it's on Amazon. There's a Kindle version, and there's a paperback that just came out. That's easy to find. And if you want to ask me questions, contact me, you know, anything, I'm on Facebook. I'm Susan Fenst, and I'm the only one so far. I don't think there are any imposters yet, but that's
not
where
yet,
you can find me.
Well,
I hope not.
Well, thank you very much. We'll have the book on our website as well. Again, our guest is Susan Fenton. Thank you.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.